Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
One of the raps about baseball has been that only the postseason is really exciting. It's like the only thing that's really worth our time. From mid-September, when teams are battling to get in, through the end of October, when there's a world championship at stake, that's the best time for baseball. Except the other 10 and a half months out of the year, it's boring. Nothing that matters ever happens. That's the rap. It's a pretty fair rap, too. Or at least it was until about a week ago. Not anymore. MLB clearly is out to prove everybody else wrong this time around. Because pretty much everything that has happened off the field this January would equal or surpass anything that actually happened on the field. Because right now, when it comes to breaking news or general insanity, every other league is now chasing Major League Baseball. No other sport is in baseball's class. Think about this. Think about this week alone. The GM and the manager of the 2017 World Series and 2019 AL champs was suspended and then fired. The team was stripped of 4 draft picks and fined $5 million as the result of an MLB investigation. Also, the manager of the 18 World Series champs was fired before the results of that particular investigation even came in. He got fired before then. And then yesterday, the Mets announced that Carlos Beltran would be stepping down as manager for his role in that scandal. This guy was gone before he managed a single game. Grand opening, grand closing. Fired before he even filled out his first lineup card. I mean, that is not easy to do. 10% of MLB's managers are gone in a single week. Pitchers and catchers are reporting in less than 4 weeks, and 3 serious teams, well, 2 serious teams and the Mets, do not have managers. The Beltran news, while not exactly unexpected, was only the start, too, because shortly after that broke, everybody lost their damn minds. Here are a couple of tweets, starting with this, quote, "I'm told to stay quiet, but I refuse. Sorry, Tiho." Jose Altuve and Bregman wore devices that buzzed on inside right shoulder from hallway video guy. Let's get it all out now. Quote, here's another. "I have pictures from locker I will keep for a rainy day. Altuve didn't want shirt torn off, if I remember. Maybe I misspoke, but Chapman gave up the home run in that game." End quote. All right, now those tweets allegedly came from Carlos Beltran's niece. And then people, again, immediately lost their collective bleep. Everybody went all Zapruder film on the Altuve home run off Aroldis Chapman that won the ALCS. They broke down his run around the bases and what appeared to be something under the jersey, and then his explanation for why he did not want to tear it off.
"You asked the teammates not to tear your shirt. Why?
What's that?
Did you ask your teammates not to tear your shirt? Why was that?
I don't know. I'm too shy. Last time they did that, I got in trouble with my wife."
All right, so theories were flying about as to why Altuve did not want his shirt torn off, why he told his teammates not to do it, and the fact that he appeared to go into the dugout or the clubhouse before putting on a championship t-shirt. And then you've got the theories involving a photo of Josh Reddick with something on his chest. The way Twitter was going, you would think these guys were covered in buzzers and electrical nodes, half robot, half hitting machine. You know, kind of like that cyborg tiger. Tiger! What if somebody accidentally hit Altuve with a bucket of water? Would he have been electrocuted? I mean, it was wild. Completely and totally wild. And then people around the game, some more connected to it than others, started to claim that it lined up with things they had heard before. A lot of people were claiming that there were multiple sources who told them about this stuff for a while, and that Carlos Beltran's niece was finally just backing it all up. And because there are a few things more compelling than a conspiracy theory on social media, the whole thing just blew up. Finally, baseball Twitter became an actual thing. Baseball Twitter. You keep this up for another day or two, and baseball may once again become our national pastime, because it was already replaced as our national pastime. Not by football, but by people losing their collective minds on Twitter. That's your new national pastime. But baseball Twitter was coming fast. Baseball Twitter got nice. Baseball fans on Twitter went full bulletin board with red string connecting screenshots, videos, theories, you name it. It was up there, and everybody was eating it up. And man, if that was the case, that was incredible. If that really went down like that, that is amazing. If that's true, Carlos Beltran's niece had exposed maybe the greatest, boldest, most incredible, most insane cheating scandal, not just in baseball, but in any sport. Cycling had nothing on that. Every Russian athlete ever had nothing on that. Guys on the Astros marching up to the plate with buzzers attached to their bodies and somebody buzzing them to let them know a pitch was coming. That is either the most bat bleep crazy conspiracy theory ever, or it is the boldest, brashest, coolest cheating scandal ever. I mean, seriously, what is more audacious than that? Seriously, banging on trash cans in a stadium full of people cannot believe how bold it would be to wear a buzzer at the plate. That is so next level. So much so that I can't lie. I actually kind of respect it. Like, why try to steal signs from second base when you can rock a buzzer on your body that signals the pitch? It's so much cleaner. It's so much more efficient. Who needs a trash can if you got a buzzer that lets you know everything? And listen, don't get this part twisted either. Don't come up in here and tell me that hitting a baseball is the hardest thing in all sports to do. That you still need to be able to put a bat on the ball, even if you do know what's coming. That it's not that big of an advantage. Wrong answer. If true, it is an enormous advantage. That's not just, you know, an athlete looking for any kind of edge they can get. An athlete working for any kind of little angle. Man, that is flat out cheating to the nth degree. And it would help a lot. It would be an enormous advantage. You don't believe me? Ask Dodgers pitcher Alex Wood. Woody said, quote, "I would rather face a player that was taking steroids than face a player that knew every pitch that was coming," end quote. 100%. I see you working, Alex. I agree with that. At least with a guy who's juicing, you can fool them. With a guy who's buzzing, you cannot fool them. If true, it does rip right at the integrity and the fabric of the game. Not my take. Don't come at me like, hey, boomer. Don't come at me like that. Cody Bellinger said it. He tweeted, quote, "For the sake of the game, I hope this isn't true. If true, there needs to be major consequences to the players. That completely ruins the integrity of the game," end quote. And then this tweet from Marley Rivera of ESPN, quote, "The Beltran family told me that this individual who claims to be Beltran's niece is not related to the family in any way. This person may or may not have additional information about the Astros sign-stealing scandal, but they are not related to the Beltrans." Now, wait a minute. You mean to tell me somebody was posing as Carlos's niece on Twitter? Yeah, you tell me what's more bizarre. Carlos's niece blowing open this scandal on Twitter, or somebody pretending to be his niece on Twitter? I mean, was this really Ronnie T who had been up to this all along?
Hey, babe, I'm just calling to say good night.
Good night.
I love you.
I love you too.
I know that you're probably doing homework or you're with the boys or grabbing me. What a fatty. I just want to say I love you and good night, and I'll be okay tonight. I'll do my best. So get your rest, and I will talk to you tomorrow. And I love you so much, hon. Sweet dreams.
I love you so much, hon. Hey, one more thing. Let's try this buzzer out. Yeah, like, there have been so many record scratches in this story. The record's just shattered now. It's broken in half. I mean, who would pretend to be Carlos Beltran's niece on Twitter? And does the fact that this person is not the niece, apparently, mean that the information is wrong? And if it's not his niece? Who is it? Some jack wagon sitting in his basement with nothing better to do? Or could it be a major league player? Like, there is so much in this take. There is so much to this story and so much in this take. And if you think it only involves the Astros and only involves buzzers and only involves the relative of a player who weighed in and that was a fake niece, you're wrong. There is so much more to this. You know, I'm not saying this for effect. I mean this sincerely. Almost everybody I know now has trouble sleeping. Do you fit into that? Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it's time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything from pills to pillows with little success, it is time for you to try Ebb. Ebb comfortably cools your forehead, and it helps to quiet the racing mind, and it promotes the natural onset of sleep. Ebb is the first and only wearable, drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind. Plus, it's clinically validated, and 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. Ebb Sleep is a wearable solution that fits over the forehead and gently and precisely cools the forehead to reduce those racing thoughts, and it allows people who are suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. And Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. This is a real issue. Many people I know have trouble sleeping. You want to have the energy to do the things that you love again, and you need to get the sleep in order to do them. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. And right now, you can try Ebb risk-free for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution you have been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's tryebb.com/Rome. Again, tryebb.com/Rome. Order today and get the sleep you need and deserve. Aaron Jones. Aaron, it is so good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Aaron, thanks for doing it. So we're about 48 hours out from the NFC Championship game. As an example, I had Tennessee Titans linebacker Wesley Woodyard on the show yesterday. He was talking about how the week before a championship game is a little different. How does this week feel to you? Is it just like a regular game week, or do you feel like it's a lot more intense because of the great opportunity that you have in front of you?
I know we have a great opportunity for us, but to me, it just felt like a game. You could tell that it's amped up, though. The focus, the details, the energy, everything's amped up. But, you know, you still got to go out there and play the game. So, it's at the end of the day, it's a game.
So what about this team? For instance, what's it say about your team, Aaron, that you guys were able to turn it around so quickly from last year where you didn't make the postseason, and now you're back with a shot at the NFC Championship game? How did you get squared away and get this thing turned around as quickly as you did?
Our leaders, coaching staff, and the guys upstairs and all the guys in the locker room. So I'd say it was a whole team effort. We know the kind of team we wanted to be, and we know the expectations that are set around here in Green Bay and in Lambeau. So we have a lot to look up to and a lot to go after.
Aaron Jones, my guest. Speaking of that, you're talking about the expectations around here and around Lambeau. You and Za'Darius Smith were at the Bucs game earlier this week, and then a huge Go Pack Go chant broke out. How great did that feel, and what's your sense as to what this means to the community and the Packer fans?
Oh, man, it means everything. You're at an NBA basketball game, and you start hearing NFL chant, a Go Pack Go chant, and there's only two of us there, and it just shows the love, the respect, and the great fans we have here in Wisconsin and all around the world.
Talking Aaron Jones of the Packers, I'm going to argue also that you and the team are not there. You're not in this spot if you don't have the game that you had on Sunday. Can you take me back before the game? Like, what was the mood like going into it, and what was your mindset personally as you hit the field?
The mood was we were all excited to be there, but we know work wasn't done. We want to keep advancing. We want to keep playing and get down to Miami. But we got to take it one game at a time, and we knew that. So we knew if we handled business, we'd set ourselves up to be in better position to get to where we wanted to be.
And then you scored twice in the second quarter on drives that completely changed that game. What did you see on that first down, and how important was it to get off to that quick lead, that early lead?
Oh, I mean, it's a fast start. I feel like you jump out on them, you kind of set the tone early, and you're letting them know that, hey, it's going to be a long day. So I feel like that jump started everything. The first carry, take it 20 to 25 yards. Like I said, just setting the tone, and I want to be that for my team.
Packers running back Aaron Jones, my guest. Now, you and I have talked in the past about your hometown of El Paso and how much pride you have in that city. After you scored on Sunday, you flashed 915, the El Paso area code. So how much does it mean to you to be representing them on the biggest stage and then to be able to shout out to everybody back home?
It means everything to me. My city's been behind me since I went to middle school, high school, college there. So they've always supported me, been behind me. We haven't had too many people make it to this level or this far. So to bring them on this journey with me is something special. I know I have their support, and they're showing me nothing but love, but I want to continue to show the love to my city and the people who continue to support me. So just putting on for them.
Packers and Niners in the NFC Championship game this weekend in San Francisco. Green Bay running back Aaron Jones, my guest. You know, I know you pride yourself on playing a complete game. So in addition to the TDs, there was also the pass protection that you had on that huge pass from Aaron to Jimmy Graham. How much pride then do you take in your pass protection? In other words, if you've got a huge block on a critical play, does that feel as good as a touchdown or a run or a huge run?
It might feel a little bit better just for me because coming in, that was one thing always everybody said about me, that I couldn't pass protect, and I couldn't do that, couldn't do this. But so I treasure that a little bit more, and even just knowing it was like to seal the game on a big, to make it a big first down, was even more added.
You know, Aaron, then the numbers, though. I mean, there's certain things that show up on a stat sheet and some things that don't, but I mentioned your numbers off the very top. And as we've talked about in the past, you've been putting up numbers ever since you arrived in the league, but you weren't getting a ton of touches initially, and it became a thing that Packer fans were getting more and more upset about, and then you finally get the opportunity this year. I know you're not about your numbers, but how special did it feel to know that the offense was counting on you and that you could deliver in the way you have?
It felt very special. I mean, last year was kind of tough sitting there, and you want to be on the field, and like your team in certain situations, and you can feel like you can help, but you're not given the opportunity. And then you flip it to this year, you're given the opportunity. They're depending on you, so you know you got to make it go happen. And it's just a good feeling knowing that they trust you and they rely on you.
You know, Aaron, when you look at the 49ers, obviously you know what they bring to it from a defensive standpoint. They are loaded, especially up front. So as you watch film of them, what is your biggest concern about going up against their defense?
They just swarm to the ball, all 11 of them. Like you said, they have a good defensive front, but, I mean, they have good linebackers as well, and they have some good DBs. They all swarm to the ball. They're good at taking away the ball. So we just have to be on our game.
So what's the mindset like when you're going to a hostile environment like that and you know it's literally 53 against whatever the number is, 75,000? It's one of 53. What's the mindset you carry in when you've got a challenge like that? What's that feel like?
I mean, it's just us. It's look around the locker room. We don't need anything more than what we have here. We got all the tools. We got all the weapons. We don't need anybody else. We don't need anybody else, like I'm saying, like any fans. We can do this by ourselves, and we'll have our fans there the next week.
Talking to Aaron Jones. Now, you've got some support, though. The Packers website has got this great story on your family and the fact that your parents do not miss a game. When you and I caught up at the Super Bowl last year on Radio Row, your twin brother Alvin and your parents were there as well. I thought it was awesome. What's it feel like to know that you've got that level of support from your fam all the time?
It's a blessing. It means the world to me just to know I can sit up in the stands and see where they're sitting. This has been something I've been doing ever since I was little. My dad actually used to coach me, but as I got older in high school, college, I would always know where they were sitting, whether it be football, basketball, or running track. I always know where they were, so I could just find them. And being able to still do that, I feel like I'm at home. I mean, when you're on the road, I'm getting to go to dinner with my parents every Saturday night. So it feels like you're at home even on an away game because you have your family there. So it's honestly a blessing to be able to have them there every game, and I love it.
Talking to Aaron Jones for a few more moments, I've got to ask you another thing or two about the family, because back in the preseason, when you guys played the Ravens, that meant that you were going up against Alvin. From the outside, it feels like the stuff of dreams, you know, the kind of thing that you talk about as kids when you're in the backyard. So what was it like to be back on the same field together again, but to do it at the NFL level?
Special, very, very special. Like you said, is something you sit in the backyard as a kid and talk about. And we did that many times, many a nights, many a days, rain, sunshine, whatever. And we never stopped working until we got what we wanted. And then even then we're continuing to work. But it's just a blessing, and it's crazy to see like everything we talked about as little kids come to life.
Talking to Aaron Jones. So let me ask you about your dad before you go. Like, one of the things that Alvin Sr. says is, quote, "I always look in his eyes and I say, I want to see that look, that hungry look," end quote. When did that first start, and what's it like to have that kind of bond and connection with your dad?
I mean, our bond we have is something special. I mean, my dad's been doing it for a while, but I can't really put an exact time frame on it, but it's been for a while. And my dad can just look in somebody's eyes and tell if they're ready or not. I mean, he was in the Army. He's been over to war and stuff, and he's been in charge of over 300-plus soldiers. So he can look into your eyes and see if you're ready, if you, like, sense fear, all of that. And so, I don't know. My dad, he's mentally tough. He's taught me everything I know, so I'm blessed to have him in my life.
That's awesome. That really is. All right, so last thought, Aaron. We talked briefly about the Niners' defense. As you go into this game, what in your mind is the biggest key to you and the Packers having success come Sunday?
Taking care of the ball, I'd say number one, and being physical, be number two, and making contested plays.
He is a running back for the Green Bay Packers, had a huge game in that win over Seattle, and his bigger reason is anybody for them being where they are right now, rushed for over 1,000 yards. Green Bay at San Francisco. Aaron, I mean this sincerely. I know we're close to a game, so I really appreciate you making time to come back on the show right before a big game. Thanks so much for doing that.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
He is CJ Nikowski. CJ, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. You know, now that I work for the Rangers, my exposure to public travel has gone down a little bit. I still have it, but I fly with the team a lot when I'm with them, so I don't get nearly as much as I used to compared to when I was working at Fox.
Yeah, I got three letters for you, MBN. Must be nice. Must be nice. But but I know you'll get like the rest of a CJ, and when you do, you'll dial us back in.
All right, yeah.
So what a crazy week it's been. There's been so much going on in baseball this week, and there are a lot of different places to start. But take me back. What was your first reaction when you first heard the allegations that the Astros were using video monitors and trash cans to signal pitches to the batter?
Yeah, the allegations didn't surprise me as much. I mean, players will try anything, and the idea of what technology you have available and using that to your advantage is not that surprising. It's a little brazen, right? The idea of using a trash can and using a sound to have that signal. Usually, right, it's a runner at second base who can then relay signs, or maybe a coach at first or third base that might be able to relay signs. It's a little bit riskier, a little bit tougher because you don't have nearly as much time. But the idea of getting the signs to the hitter without anybody on base and using a loud sound to do it. Like, there's been accusations over the years, and even going back to me during the 90s and early 2000s, about teams and a light being out in the outfield somewhere that only the players knew where it was, and they'd look for it. If they saw that light go on, they knew it was a fastball. Those kinds of things have always been kind of rumored, but we've never had evidence like this, and we've never had an organization get as ballsy as this by using a trash can, something that everyone could hear if they had any idea what was going on.
You've got the trash can, and then, of course, you've got buzzer technology, if in fact that exists. You tweeted yesterday, this scandal, quote, has cost three managers their jobs, at least one executive his, numerous high-round draft picks, millions in salary, two tainted World Series. The damage done by the decision to cheat and then cheat again is absolutely jaw-dropping. The inner circle of scandal ruined lives, end quote. It's a really strong tweet. Just how bad is this for baseball?
Yeah, I mean, it's brutal for the game. I think the good news is that, you know, every time something comes up like PEDs, like with, you know, amphetamines, and we've had to go through these periods where they're rough gambling situations, we always come out of it. And it was just time to get things cleaned up. And so Mike Fiers decided to go ahead and make that happen. But, you know, the collateral damage is significant. You know, I think about guys like A.J. Hinch, who didn't participate but didn't stop it. Right, so he gets suspended for a year without pay. He loses 1 year of salary. They fire him, and I don't know the details of his contract, but they may have just cause in there not to have to pay him at all. He had 3 years left on his deal. I mean, that's upwards of potentially around $9 million for him that is lost, and it wasn't like he was a player that made a ton of money during his career. I mean, that's significant for him if that ends up being the case. And, you know, it's just, that's the part that gets really shocking. And Alex Cora, you know, same situation, a couple of years left on his contract. Carlos Beltran doesn't even make it to spring training. And who knows if he'll ever manage again. I know he's fine. He's done really well for himself. But he said he only wanted to manage in New York and was waiting for that opportunity to come up. He turned down opportunities to interview other places. And so for a guy that seemed like he had the passion to manage but kind of on his terms, may never get that opportunity now because of what happened. So it's significant damage that'll last for a while. I think this is one that we'll talk about for a long time.
We're talking to CJ Nikowski. I'm going to go back to Mike Fiers in a minute, CJ, but what about the managers you mentioned? In your opinion, do the punishments for Hinch, Cora, and Beltran, do they fit their crimes?
You know, the Beltran one was tough for me. I didn't feel strongly about him losing his job. It was interesting that the Mets said that they were blindsided by the fact that he was in the report and they had never broached the subject with him. That's surprising, I think, to everybody that has been kind of watching this, that it never came up. He did lie to the media, which is, you know, I understand why he did it. You know, you don't have to tell the media the truth, but if you're going to lead an organization, you do. And I think the idea that that was his first reaction is probably what cost him that opportunity, especially in that market. It's 1 year for Hinch as far as the suspension goes. I mean, he could be managing again theoretically in 2021. I don't think it's going to happen, but it was a 1 year penalty. I was a little stiffer than I expected. I thought it was going to be a couple of months, and you know, good for Rob Manfred, because if it was just a couple of months and he was managing that team in June, I don't know how much of a deterrent that really would have been. You know, and Alex Cora is not done yet. He got fired or let go, or they, you know, they used the, you know, parting ways, and it was mutual. But he still has to face his punishment. They still have to finish up that Red Sox investigation. He very well may get 2 years. And so it was heavy-handed. I know some people are saying it's too light. I felt like it was pretty heavy-handed, but Rob Manfred certainly made his point.
CJ Nikowski joining us. All right, so what about Fiers? He's taken some heat in some corners, and not a little either, for speaking out.
Yeah.
What do you think of how he handled it?
You know, this thing was so big in the end that I think it's okay that he did it that way. I understand, you know, people say clubhouse culture, and I get it. I think clubhouse culture had to lead with A.J. Hinch not saying anything just because of the clubhouse culture, even though he was the manager, not to say anything and tell players that they couldn't do something. I know a lot of fans are upset. He waited till he left. I was talking to a former player today who seemed really upset about it and said, screw him. You know, why didn't he say anything when he was getting support, run support from these guys that were cheating at the time? You know, you go on the other side and you see your team getting beat, or you see young guys struggling to keep their head above water. They're already a really good team. And knowing that they have that kind of advantage, it seems like that, from what we can gather, was kind of pulling at him, and that's why he decided to say something. This was a big deal. This wasn't something small. This wasn't, hey, heads up, they're really good at relaying signs, and you know, just make sure you guard your signs a little bit better. I mean, this was pretty sinister as far as the way that they did it and the depths that they went to make it happen. I don't have a problem with him saying anything. I don't know if I would have felt differently when I had the uniform on, or if I was a member of the Astros. I'm sure if I played for them at the time, I probably would be upset with him that he did it. So I get that side of the argument, but I don't have a problem that he went public with it, right? If he doesn't go public, this thing ends up being a column from an anonymous source, and it probably dies. Mm. And everything continues the same, and everyone still has their job. And while I wish everyone had their job, the fact of the matter is that they made a bad decision that led to them getting fired and suspended. And that's probably better for the game.
So obviously it is a big deal. It's a very big deal. In relative terms, for instance, how does this compare to the PED scandal?
Yeah, it's a tough one. It was interesting. Alex Wood tweeted out that he would rather face a player on steroids than one that knew every pitch it was coming. And I had to think about that one for a little while because, you know, the PED stuff gave you such a physical but also a mental advantage, the confidence and less fatigue over the course of a full season. And I'm kind of back and forth on it a little bit, but I get what he's saying. And the idea that it's probably worse, I don't know. You know, the thing with PEDs, they're illegal, right? I mean, people say, oh, they weren't, you know, baseball didn't have rules at the time. Well, it's still illegal, right? You weren't allowed to buy steroids. That was always illegal. So you had to break the law to take PEDs, which was, you know, kind of a big deal. And we got some of our, you know, greatest records that have now been ruined, right? Nobody has ever broken even Roger Maris's record that didn't take PEDs, right? That still kind of stinks for our game. Like, I hate that part of our game. So the historical factor, maybe PEDs is a little bit worse, but this one, it's close. I mean, it's definitely right up there. And as far as the actual offense, you know, player to player, this one might be worse.
All right, so what about that? Like, if you're a batter, how much of an edge is there if you were tipped off to what was coming either by a trash can lid or a buzzer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the idea of the paranoia when you hear that you might be tipping pitches.
Yeah.
For pitchers, I mean, it completely freaks you out. We've seen it. It comes up all the time these days because, you know, hitters are really good at kind of detecting and watching and looking for tells, and that's a real thing. And then take a guy like Aroldis Chapman, right? The guy that Jose Altuve hit the home run against and ended up eliminating the Yankees from championship series this year and sending them home. I don't think the Band-Aid thing is real. We'll see. There's just no real evidence behind that right now. But the idea that you could eliminate one of Aroldis Chapman's pitches, right, when you're dealing with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball or a really nasty slider, and you can stand in the box with confidence knowing that that fastball is not coming, you can sit on the slider, that's a big deal. And it's probably a bigger deal now in today's game because we have so many power arms. Like, these guys are so good and throw so hard. So if you can eliminate something or sit on something, you know a fastball is coming, and this guy sits 95 to 100, you're feeling a lot better and a lot more confident and get zoned in. So it's a huge deal for hitters.
CJ Nikowski joining me for a few more moments. Expertly done, as always. All right, so what about the suggestion, CJ, that technology is the real problem here? In your mind, is technology the problem?
No, because I think you could have done this 25 years ago, right? You could have set up a camera in the outfield. Now, the camera would have been a lot bigger and clunkier, and you wouldn't have gotten an HD back in your clubhouse. It would have been a monitor that's 10 times heavier than every other monitor and bigger, but you could have done it. The technology, for me, at least as far as what the Astros did and what we know they did, I don't think is the issue. I do think the idea of the replay room and hitters going back and watching at-bats throughout the game, that probably needs to go away. When you have that opportunity, you know, you may pick up something inadvertently, right? You might be going back to watch, you know, one of your at-bats, say you're a DH, and you get to go back afterwards, and you're watching your at-bat from the first inning, and all of a sudden you notice something that maybe the pitcher's tipping, or you can pick up a sign, or you see something that gives you an advantage. That probably shouldn't happen. So that replay room needs to be separate from the clubhouse. It needs to be closed off, in my opinion. Come game time, and you want to go look at your at-bats, you can do it after the game and make your assessment from there. But just the idea of accessing video in real time probably needs to be completely shut down. But, I mean, the other technology, some people have a tendency to lump it all together. Like, what we're doing with pitchers and hitters and the measurements that they can take and these cameras that they have, the things that are called Rapsodo and TrackMan and other things, none of that was used in cheating, and you couldn't use that stuff necessarily to cheat. So that's moved the game forward in a big way, and that had nothing to do with this and shouldn't go away.
And then let me finally ask you this then. How prominent, if you had to guess, how prevalent do you think it is? For instance, were the Astros and Red Sox the only teams cheating like this, allegedly, or are they the only ones who've been caught so far?
Yeah, this is a tough one because I've really missed on the steroid one. You know, when people started throwing that 50% number around, I was like, no, there's no way. And then over the years, I'm like, you know what, maybe it was at least that and maybe even higher. I always have a tendency to want to be optimistic and give people the benefit of the doubt, which you end up losing on more often than not. But I would say, you know, it's hard to put a number on it. You know, the question is not so much about cheating, but are you going, you know, or stealing signs, but are you going above and beyond? Rob Manfred issued that statement, told all the teams, you cannot use electronics to cheat. We've seen teams try, which is a problem. You can't pick up the replay phone and call up to the replay room and ask a question that's not regarding replay. And so little things like that, certainly it happened. I will tell you that it was probably about five years ago, I was calling a game in Cleveland, and Justin Verlander was pitching against the Indians in Cleveland. Nobody on base, and he was using multiple signs. And so I just brought up on the broadcast, it was a national Fox broadcast, and said, listen, he's doing that because he's suspicious of something in the stadium. I'm not saying they did anything, but those kind of suspicions are real. And they obviously weren't Justin Verlander, and he was taking no chances. He didn't come out and say that he thought they were cheating. It was just more precautionary for him, and he was probably going off of something that he had heard in the past or something that he experienced that threw him off a little bit. So, you know, players, especially pitchers, are always a little bit curious, but to put a number on it is tough. But it's probably more than just these two teams. It's like anything, man. Like, you know, there's a bunch of guys that got away with taking steroids, and it's a terrible advice, but the reality is if you're going to cheat, just don't get caught.
Exactly, and these guys got caught. He is a 10-year MLB vet. He was the ninth pick overall in 1994. He is a broadcaster now for the Rangers. He's the host of MLB Radio. And CJ, charter or not, I don't care. You will always be America's foremost authority on travel etiquette. You're my guru, my go-to. So don't forget it. That's a responsibility that you need to live up to still.
Oh, I know. Don't let me steer you wrong. I still have plenty of commercial flights, just not nearly as many.
Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat, at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We are talking to Kevin Ioli. Does that feel different to you than most other fight weeks?
Always. I mean, the excitement that's out there when Conor McGregor's fighting, he brings in really rabid fight fans. I mean, it's crazy the atmosphere that you see. And even though the press conference the other day wasn't as wild as we're used to seeing a Conor McGregor press conference be, it was still a great event. I mean, it was sold, you know, not sold out, but filled. There was a ton of people at the Palms there watching the press conference, and all week long, the atmosphere, and there's just this anticipation that something crazy is going to happen.
Right, so one of the big talking points this week, and this goes to what you just said about the presser, is about whether or not Conor is a changed person. Like, a major change was the fact that he was actually on time for that press conference.
Yeah.
It might seem minor, but when you couple that with the actual tone that you speak of, does it feel like he might be a little bit different now?
That was my take. I actually wrote that the other day after the press conference. And, you know, you never know what's going through somebody's mind. And, you know, I'm certainly not a mind reader. But I look at this guy, and when he came into the UFC, I mean, he was a fun guy, and you liked him. I mean, he talked trash, but he was funny. And, you know, he was always trying to challenge himself and take on big fights. And as he got more successful, one of the things that happened, I thought, is he became unlikable. You know, he became nasty. And, you know, what he did with Khabib during the lead-up to that fight was really bad. I mean, you know, it was mocking his religion, mocking his wife, mocking his father, and it just got really nasty and personal, and it just wasn't a good look. And then on top of that, you had Conor's actions outside of the cage, you know, some of the things that he was doing. And so that was really not a good look, and it was like, you know what, I don't care if I ever see that Conor again. But to see the Conor we saw at the press conference the other day, if that is really where he's at in his life, I think it's good for a number of reasons. First of all, it's good for him as a man and good for his family. But second, Jim, I think it bodes well for the sport. He's talking about fighting three times this year. He wants to be active. He said if he wins this and comes out of it, he wants to fight on the first week of March at UFC 248. There's nothing better for the sport if Conor is engaged and active, because he's an entertaining fighter, he's a terrific fighter, and he's a guy that wants to fight the best. So that just rises everything in the UFC when you have a guy like that fighting. So I hope that this is not just an act on his part, and that this is really kind of him going back to who he once was.
We are talking to Kevin Ioli. Well said. All right, Kevin, so what about from a fighting standpoint? He has not stepped into the cage for a fight since October of 2018. He has not won a fight since November of 2016. Do you have any idea what to expect from Conor tomorrow night?
Yeah, you know, he looks great. I tweeted a photo just a little bit ago, and you saw a picture of Conor when he was trying to make featherweight, and he had the sunken eyes and just looked terrible, and you wonder what he did to his body as he was cutting weight down to that, compared to what he looked like today, where he was muscular, he looked healthy. The thing is, you know, his timing is going to be the biggest question, I think. You know, Conor is a fighter, and this is going to be, I believe, a stand-up fight. Conor has the faster hands, and he's got the bigger punch than Cowboy has. So I think if it turns into a stand-up fight, everything favors Conor. It's just going to be, does he have the timing? If he gets to the ground, I think, you know, that's where it's advantage Cowboy Cerrone. But I'll say this. Even though Conor was really dominated and eventually submitted by Khabib, think of what he did on the ground in that fight, Jim. He actually defended well for quite a long time. You know, he was on the mat in each of those rounds with Khabib, and normally Khabib finishes you. He gets you down, and he puts you out, as he did to Dustin Poirier his last time out. Conor, for a guy that's not known as a grappler, I thought did very well to get into the fourth round against Khabib. So, you know, it's not a guarantee that that Cerrone would submit him. I think Conor will end up finishing him. I don't discount Cerrone. I think that's why this fight is fun to think about and talk about, because both guys can win. I just think Conor's fast hands and power are going to be the difference.
Kevin Ioli is joining us once again. You know, we could talk about Conor the entire time, and I'm glad you brought up Cowboy. There's some really interesting angles involving Cowboy Cerrone, but for those who do not know him or only know his name, Kevin, and are not familiar with him as a fighter, how would you describe Cerrone in the cage?
Cerrone is just an aggressive, you know, he's a guy that, you know, if you see two dudes facing off at the bar, he's the guy that loves to fight. He's the one that wants to instigate the fight. Let's throw down. And then he'll pick up his beer and drink his beer after he's done fighting. I mean, he's that kind of guy. He's the UFC's all-time win leader. He's the UFC's all-time knockdown leader. He leads in fight night bonuses. He's a guy that's always in these unbelievable fights, but he's a well-rounded guy. You know, he's a kickboxer, but he has great submissions. He showed that to Mike Perry when they fought. I mean, he's a guy that can do a little bit of everything. If there's a knock on Donald, Jim, it's the fact that when he gets to the top level, I don't know if it's he's not good enough or he mentally just can't get over the hurdle. He's 2-7 in fights against current or former UFC champions. That is not a good sign for him. He's got a lot of good wins, but when he gets to that really big fight, that's when he kind of struggles, and there's no bigger fight than Conor McGregor. So that's going to be, can he mentally overcome and get over that hurdle this week?
You know, you touched on it, Kevin, but let me put it to you another way. In your opinion, has he not fared well on that big stage because he can't handle the pressure of the moment, or how much of that is about him going up against, as you point out, either current or former champs, guys who are just better than him?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a point that, hey, there's guys that are better than he is. There's no doubt about that. But I think, you know, sometimes Cowboy, just because of what I said when you first asked me about him, the way he wants to fight, he doesn't always fight the smartest fight. And I think sometimes he, to his detriment, you know, he gets out there and he wants to entertain the fans and put on a show, and that's made him beloved among the hardcore fans who follow the sport religiously, but that hasn't always served him well in terms of winning fights. And I think the thing for him to do tomorrow is to come up with a game plan and don't worry about impressing the crowd. You know, he said he wants to blow the roof off the place. If he won a boring decision, that would be the absolute best thing for him. He doesn't have to worry about blowing the roof off the place, just get the win.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's what he's thinking or that's what he would do. I would agree with you. You've also written, Kevin, that a fight with Conor is similar to a fight with Mike Tyson or Floyd Mayweather, because not only do you have to beat the guy in front of you, not only do you have to beat the fighter, you have to beat the aura of the fighter. How do you think Cowboy will handle that part of the challenge?
You know, that is the big question in this fight. And, you know, I think that that's going to be a difficult thing for him, really. I honestly do. You know, when he's going to walk to the cage, Cowboy's always gotten cheered, and he's been the fan favorite in almost every fight he's ever been in. People love him. Even when he fought Nate Diaz, who they also love, you know, he got out there and they were rooting for both guys. They just wanted to see a good fight. It's going to be different tomorrow. It's going to be a fight for that favors Conor McGregor. The fans are going to be here very loudly for McGregor. And I think it's tough, you know, as you're a guy like Cerrone, and especially such an emotional guy as he is, I think it's going to be tough for him.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. Now, Kevin, the fight, as you mentioned, or I'm going to mention this, you talked about how Conor looks good right now physically. It is at 170. So how significant is that weight for both fighters?
I think that is advantage Donald Cerrone. I mean, Cerrone has fought. Look, I was looking at some of his best wins, and he fought Patrick Cote and beat Patrick Cote, who fought for the middleweight title. So Donald has beaten bigger guys. You know, Donald has been able to deal with the bigger guys. Conor is a small guy, and when you saw them line up next to each other, I mean, there is a big difference. It's 4 inches in height, but Donald is the wider guy. Certainly, I think physically, just the bigger guy, and that's going to be one thing. Does he have the chin to withstand, you know, Conor's power? Now, you know, obviously, when you move up in weight, Conor was the hardest puncher at 145. There's no way he's going to be the hardest puncher that Donald has ever seen in his career, because he's just not as big as some of these guys. That being said, the speed is going to be a factor. I think Cowboy, though, you know, is going to physically come into this fight with the advantage in terms of size, and that could help him in a number of ways, both in the grappling as well as in taking punches from Conor.
Yeah, so, Kevin, Conor is the heavy favorite, and many are assuming that he'll win that fight. I agree. I mean, Cerrone can win this fight. If he's smart, if he fights tactically, intelligently, he could win this fight. He might not put on the show that he wants to put on, but he can win the fight. If Conor were to lose, how bad would that be for his reputation, and where would that leave him?
Yeah, I think if he loses, that really hurts him quite a bit. I mean, because now you're talking, you know, two MMA fights that you've lost, as well as the Mayweather boxing match, you know, you're going to be getting into the close to 4-year time frame since he had a win. And this is a fight that most people, you know, people were, if they were complaining about the fight, it was, why is he fighting Cerrone and not fighting Justin Gaethje, who beat Cerrone? And now if he loses to the guy, you know, then that really puts him in a bad spot. But I think Conor, you know, in this way is like Mike Tyson. You know, when Tyson started to lose toward the tail end of his career, he was no less of a draw. And so I don't think if Conor chooses to go on, let's assume for a second he loses this fight and he chooses to continue to fight, I think people will still support him. I think he'll still have that rabid fan base because of what he's accomplished. It'll be like it was with Tyson and even Ali after he lost. The fans will stay with him, but I certainly think it'll hurt his reputation quite a bit.
All right, so one last thought then, Kevin. On that point, Dana White made it pretty clear that if Conor does win, he'll get the rematch with Khabib. Right. And Dana believes that fight would be huge. How big would that be, and then how much of a chance would you give Conor to win that fight?
Well, I think it would be massive. I texted Dana the other day as I was writing about it, and I said, hey, Dana, I'm thinking that if Conor wins and Khabib wins, because Khabib has a fight that's no guarantee against Tony Ferguson, Jim. So,
sure.
You know, that is at UFC 249, and that's certainly an unbelievable fight there. But I think I think a Conor Khabib rematch would do 3 million on pay per view. They did about 2.4 million the last time, and Dana said 100%. So, you know, I think you know he and I are thinking the same way on that. I think that's going to be a massive, massive fight. It'll have media coverage from all over the world. That will be a really big one. I cannot see Conor beating Khabib. I just don't think the styles match up. You know, Conor has the power to knock him out. But we saw Khabib drop him last time. Now, Conor was drinking, he said, during fight week that time and wasn't as committed as he is this time. But I just think the gulf in their grappling is so big that I don't see Conor ever beating Khabib.
All right, so a quick follow to that. Khabib and Ferguson, Kevin, I mean, if you don't know the sport, you wouldn't know this. But, I mean, could that be literally one of the best fights in UFC history in terms of the matchup itself?
I think that could be a crazy good fight because Ferguson is just this unbelievable striker who, if you look at, just search for Tony Ferguson opponents on the internet and you come up with, look at these faces of guys after they fought him. He just tears them apart. But Ferguson was a college wrestler who has the ground game and has the submissions. So he's not going to be as good as Khabib in that area, but he has the striking that's going to be better. That fight, I can't tell you how much I look forward to that fight, Jim. I think that's going to be one of the most fun fights the UFC has put on. And the UFC, give them credit, month in, month out, they put on some big-time fights. And Khabib and Ferguson is among the best that they could make.
James Kelly, The Flight Deck. He's got some kind of wacky title around here, like director of digital content or something or other. Here he is. Sit on down, man. Your head's not getting any smaller. What's up, Deck? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, Jim. Feeling good.
All right, so this is your triumphant return after your game-changing appearance of last week. Before we get to your picks, I need to know, chronicle all the ways in which your life has changed since your appearance on this show last week.
I would say the biggest change, instead of making fun of my big fat forehead and head, they just now clown my horrible picks, which I still don't think they're very horrible. I thought they were pretty good last week. And I still think I should have gone 3-1, had some Seattle Seahawk wide receiver caught a ball, but I did go 2-2, and that's part of the game. But I am getting blown up quite a bit back home by friends. People see us everywhere, obviously, right? Bars, casinos, everywhere, yeah.
I got to ask you something. Okay, first of all, yeah, that was a costly drop. That did hurt. That really did hurt. But when you're talking about friends and people back home, how about Mark Melanson? Is he hitting you up?
He hasn't hit me up yet. They're kind of busy in baseball, so I haven't bugged him much.
Yeah, but you used to coach him. He'd take that call.
I did. He should. I should hit him up, though.
That is still the craziest thing ever in the history of this show. You coached Melanson.
Carnation Bowl champions, Jim. 1998.
My bad.
Went undefeated, actually.
Where's the ring? Yeah, I need documentation. You can't just run up in here and say things like that without documenting it. Like Alvin, I know, won a state championship as a point guard. I can go right to YouTube and see that. How can you prove that you won that championship with him?
I probably got a picture somewhere. I got to have him on someday to validate that and how much of an influence I probably was in his life. So,
All right, then. So last week, and I'm sure you were a great influence on his life, both personally and professionally. Last week you did say, Deck, that you sent the wife and the kids to the zoo so they would not find out that either you gamble or you're on TV talking about gambling. Did they find out, and what did they think of your appearance?
She hasn't found out. She's kind of – she knows something's going on because, like I said, people have been reaching out and asking questions, and she's been looking at her bank account a little bit more. So I'm a little nervous right now, but I did change the 9-month-old because I got a 9-month-old kid. I changed his appointment to today, but that's about the last time I'm going to be able to pull this off because she is coming in pretty good.
Wait a minute. You sent the wife and your 9-month-old to the doctor right around, like, right now?
Yeah, right about now. Well, I did it actually the third hour.
And that wasn't suspicious. That was not suspicious to her.
Well, it kind of was, but it was scheduled for next Monday. But I said, hey, push it up because we got plans Monday night. So she did. So
nice try with that. I guarantee she's not buying it. All right. So really quickly, what was the clone reaction to your picks? Like, what was the clone reaction when you appeared on the show? And then what was the reaction throughout the weekend as those picks played out?
All great last Friday. They were positive for once. I've never seen the clones so positive about something like one of the XR4Ts coming on. They were very, very nice. But come Saturday, about Minnesota, San Francisco, about third quarter there, a lot of negative clones out there, Jim. They started blowing up the old Twitter account, calling me all kinds of nice names and everything like that. And throughout the weekend,
Slider,
more negative than the positive. But, you know, that kind of comes with its territory.
That's what we signed up for. I like that. Jim, there's a lot of negative clones out there. Yes, there are. Yes, there are. All right, so let's give them something to be negative about. Or positive. Let's break it down. It is time. Starting with the AFC Championship game, you've got the Titans +7.5. That's your spread. The over-under is 53. Titans on the money line, +265. Do you want the road dog, or are you going with the home team?
I'm going to go with the road team. Once again, I've been riding the Titans for the last 4 weeks. They're physical. They're smart. They're tough. And 4-0 this year when they're 4-point dogs or more, and they've won every single one of those games outright. So I'm going to jump back on the Mike Vrabel, Derrick Henry train, and I'm going to hit them at 7.5 points for the Titans.
Have you done that yet? Did you get 7.5?
I did, actually, because of waiting on injury news, and I thought it might benefit the Titans more right now at 7.5, and I saw some of the money might be pushing that line down to 7, so I did hit the 7 plus 7.5, so...
All right, so +7.5, before I leave that topic really quickly, you know, we're waiting on Chris Jones. That's one of the things we're waiting on,
right?
And it looks like he might be a coin flip. They might see him day of the game. They went and did that last week. He did not play. If they do not have him, how big of a hit in your mind is that to the Chiefs?
It's a big hit. The calf injury is going to be I think it's going to affect him regardless of the situation because it's his calf. I'm not Trevor Price by no means, but I would imagine a calf injury would hurt him. So especially if the Titans get behind, he's their best interior. He's actually their only interior pass rush guy they got. So Chris Jones' injury is big, big, big right now.
All right, so really quickly, what about Ryan Tannehill? How much do they need from Ryan Tannehill in order to cover or win this game outright?
Do what he's done. I mean, he didn't throw a lot of yards the last two games where they've won, but he's played better defense. What's going to happen, I'd imagine, is obviously Kansas City's going to jam that box, try to stop Derrick Henry. He's going to have single coverage on the outside, and nobody this year has thrown the deep ball better than Ryan Tannehill. So, he's done it all year. He has to do it again. And then if they get behind, like I said, this isn't Baltimore or New England where their defense is that good. He can bail them out. He's better than people are giving him credit for, but he does have to be good to give him a chance.
Top-rated quarterback in the league right now.
There
All right,
go.
So the big head in studio, you've got the Titans +7.5. What about the NFC Championship game? Last check, that game was also a 7.5-point spread. The over-under is 46.5. The Packers are +265 on the money line. If you go that way, who you got?
I hit it Sunday night. I did Sunday night right when it came out. I went the Niners -7 because I thought it would go the other way. So I did get the -7. I just think overall it is tough to beat them twice in a row without a doubt. And the Packers, a 13-win team, right? Who are 7-point underdogs or more, history's on their side. I mean, they should, if history does, you know, proves itself right, the last three games like that in the NFC Championship game, they have won that. I just think that this 49ers team is just too good, too balanced. That defense is just nasty. They're healthy. So It's going to be close. It's going to be right around that, but I am going to take the Niners.
Do you trust Jimmy G on the big stage? I know that he does not need to win that game by himself, but do you trust him on the big stage?
After watching last week in the Vikings, I don't have all the trust in the world in him, obviously, and he has a tendency to put that ball out there and everywhere. He's the X factor, man. If he gives the ball to the Packers a couple of times, they're going to be right in this whole game. But why I do have some trust in him is because of Kyle Shanahan, the scheming that they're going to do. You know, the
man,
nobody,
you love that family.
I love
the Shanahans, don't you?
I love the Shanahans, and LaFleur is part of that system without a doubt. But you'll notice the 49ers lead the entire league in yards after catch. Well, a lot of that is play design because a lot of guys are so freaking wide open in Kyle's system, which should help Jimmy. I mean, he's going to have wide open guys. He's just got to do his thing. So hopefully he knocks the nerves off
last week. So let me confirm this really quickly. You've got Titans plus 7 or 7.5?
7.5 Titans plus 7.5.
And then you've got the Niners minus.
-7.
7.
Yep.
All right, there are the picks. How about a bonus pick? We've got Connor and Cowboy, UFC 246. Connor's the heavy favorite in this fight at minus 315, but he has not fought in 15 months. He has not won in much longer than that. Who you got in the fight?
Connor should win this. Like you said yesterday, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him to perform, so he should win this fight. And if he does, I won't be surprised if it was fast. Having said that, a lot of people are discounting Cerrone. If like you always say, MMA and boxing different, right? Everybody's always going to lose in MMA because basically their gloves are a lot thinner, right? Cerrone, he's a good fighter. He's a good stand-up fighter. He's not a fish out of water like a lot of people are with Connor. He could hang with him. So if you wanted to hit that, it's not the worst bet in the world if you wanted to go Cerrone here.
All right, so he's a good stand-up fighter. Does he really want to stand in front of Conor McGregor?
He wants to.
Do you think his pride's going to get in the way, and will he say, hey, you know what, I can stand with this guy?
Well, he said it will. So he said he will stand with him. He doesn't want to stand in the pocket or Conor's kill zone by no means because Conor's left. I mean, it ices people, and it's accurate. But he can stand on the outside, and the biggest thing with him, he is a great Muay Thai fighter. If he could finish his combinations with kicks, high kicks, low kicks, you know, peck away at that beginning thing, he could grapple him to the ground. It's not going to be a traditional takedown like wrestling. He could take Connor down and he could submit him that way, but it's not going to be traditional stuff. But I mean, Donald can do that.
Dude, easy. Bitch. I got Kevin Ioli coming up next hour. I mean, take it easy. So I got about 30 seconds. If you were to hit that, which would you hit?
I think I'm going to lean towards Connor. I think Connor should finish it.
Way to be definitive.
Kind of
I think I might. I might if I get around to it, if I have any money left, if the wife doesn't know. I guess if you make me pick, I guess maybe kind of.
I'll go Connor for sure. I'll take the odds. It is high, but I'll take Connor. I think you'll finish him.
All right, we'll see how it goes. James Kelly coming back in. Good job, Flight Deck. Have a great weekend. Clones, what's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. Hell of a weekend. San Francisco started the weekend off with a dominant win over the Vikings.
Fires over the middle and it's intercepted in the 40-yard line by Richard Sherman.
In the playoffs, in big games, I show up.
Oh my God, this is a big Richard Sherman house.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game.
You know, he might be.
Yeah, they fake it. They snap it to Reed.
Houston, absolutely self-destructed.
You know, I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
You just turned a blowout into your own beatdown in a playoff game. That's the opposite of heading in the right direction.
Bill O'Brien is a horse's ass boob.
Touchdown, Titans!
This team right now, his identity is get the playoffs and choke.
Having said that, folks who are trying to make that out, like Lamar Jackson is some sort of a bust, are so desperate and so transparent. Do not even come in here with that junk. Tom Pelissero.
I'm hanging in, Jim. 3 weeks till Super Bowl Sunday. Let's do this.
Would you cut your off for a Super Bowl?
Oh. Been married 20 years?
Yeah, probably.
One day you will be married 20 years and you will not need it.
She would be like, do you want me to do it?
I hear that and I think not only is he the best guy to come off that Belichick tree, he's better than the hood. Therese Paylor. Oh no, not again in the stadium.
I think stunned silence is a really good way to describe it. And...
And speaking of stunned silence,
I love Isaiah Thomas, and I always want to say this on your show. Ward is getting back from Red Lobster.
From Red Lobster.
With a win tonight over Clemson.
It is the morning after the national championship game. How you feeling? Welcome to the jungle. That game is over, right? It did end, right?
Well, I didn't get the job at USC. I might be an assistant.
USC had him and didn't want him. Even LSU initially had him and wasn't sure they wanted him. And now look at him. On top of the mountain, looking down on everybody else.
Go Tigers.
Touchdown, Dennis LSU. Dodd.
One of my favorite stats. He averaged one touchdown pass per quarter this season at 60.
Fred Warner is my guest.
You know, with a little vengeance on their mind just because of how that game went the first time, we know that we're going to have to work even harder.
Dismiss A.J. Hinch.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. It's only cheating if you get caught. Well, they were caught. They're not going to strip the Astros of that world championship and just give it to the Dodgers.
Absolutely not.
Just like nobody stripped any PED user of their numbers.
I don't think it taints it.
You really want to punish the players, Jim. For the first 20 games, the opposing team gets four outs instead of three outs.
I got an idea. When they take the field, they're not allowed to have gloves. They have to catch it either with their hat or in their mouth or with their bare hands. Lorenzo Alexander. Let's make sure, Lorenzo, this is not the last time we do this.
Most definitely. You know, hopefully I can kind of venture my way into your world and learn that business and learn that skill set. Be your colleague one of these days.
Well, man, I'm here for it.
I appreciate that.
Beef jerky segment.
Like a really mature middle-aged guy looking at a 16-year-old who said she'd be right with me when she was doing nothing. I turn around and I walk out. But I left the bottles on the counter to make my point. Just trying to buy a vegan protein shake. By the way, it tastes like ass. Just sell it to me. When Jake came home, I'm like, damn, Powder. What's up? Jake's like in the backyard just trying to bag Rays. He's trying to get whatever sun he can in January.
Easy decision for Red Sox and for
I like Alex Cora. Now that that shoe is dropped, my only other question is, how is Carlos Beltran, new Mets manager, who was actively involved in this as an Astros player, currently skating? He is Bill Cowher.
Thanks, Romy. Hey, listen, at least this time you don't have to go all the way to New York. We're going to meet you halfway in Kansas City.
I appreciate you doing that too, Coach. Thanks for looking out for me. $1,000 in scratch-off tickets. Here's what I have to say about that. Wash away my shot, wash away my prize with a stack of scratcher tickets. Wore lady bums using trash bags as prom dresses. Oh, this dress. Who was the designer? I was going to go hefty, but it's a prom, so I threw down for Glad.
Fuck!
Hope that was worth it, Patch.
Wore lady bums.
Wesley Woodyard.
Damn, how you doing today? What's
good
up with the jungle? And you have two choices. Either you can him around or you can tell him the truth and show him the right way.
I gotta give credit where credit is due.
Nobody works a mic like that guy, which is why it was kind of strange to hear him up there hyping up and being nice to Cowboy.
Stomp on his head as he's unconscious.
Dana White, August McGregor clothing line. You and I are both David August guys. How come we don't have a clothing line?
Yeah, right. I don't know, because we're not Conor McGregor, I guess.
Why do you think I had such a chip on my shoulder? It's because of that childhood that I spent shoveling horse crap when I didn't ride, listening to jazz, which I hated, and fixing fences, which I was not good at.
Saying something sucks is not a take, but when all of your three major sports teams totally suck, that is a take.
Anybody involved in a baseball game with an electronic anything is a felony. Anybody who does it is gone forever.
Aaron Jones, a guest of the Jim Rome Show, said he can feel the difference from this week from the usual routine.
The focus, the details, the energy, everything's amped up.
Bring it in here, big head.
A lot of negative clones out there, Jim.
You're everyone's problem.
Right next to Al Gore. That's where he'll be in dry.
Then I'll rip that tiger off your gut and beat you with it.
Golden Tick.
Python, good man.
You can take that to the bank.
A block is forever dope.
Big shout out to Queens, by the way.
Yes, sir,
all time.
And y'all chicken.
Think that I should stay into a fourth hour.
Drew Kalisky.
Have a nice.
Take it easy on that seagull.
I know, man.
And that will be in Kansas City.
Kansas City.
Good night now.
So good.
Flight deck. Meet the flight deck. He's a part of the Rome family. Has a giant forehead. His dome will go down in history. Now James Kelly's making football picks. Clones hope he wins more games than the Knicks. Someday we'll see his head when it's carved into Mount Rushmore. Right next to Al Gore. That's where he'll be in dry.
I don't care what you have to say, Parody Larry. Because you're Parody Larry.
Not a very good call.
For the last time, Lawrence. First of all, it's a miracle that you got to the end of your song. You should have walked off on that. In fact, let's go to the phones right now. Before I go to this guy, I want to remind you who this guy is. This is the guy who threatened to meet Conor McGregor at the airport rip his beard off his face, and make him eat it.
Next time you fly to Las Vegas, I'll be waiting for you at the airport. Then I'm going to rip that beard off your face and make you eat it.
That guy, Callan Vegas, he has not come around in quite some time, but he's back. Just in time for Conor McGregor to make his triumphant return to the octagon. Cal, what's up, Cal?
Please, Conor don't want none of this. I'll blast Conor over the head with one of his Irish whiskey bottles. Jim, that sound you played was from Smack Off 23. I told you years ago that this guy is an overrated clown. Dude hasn't won a fight since then. Conor, you're Chael Sonnen with an Irish accent. Some big bag of hot air. I'm Conor McGregor. I got a $5 haircut. I'm Conor McGregor. I got a tattoo of a tiger. Then I'll rip that tiger off your gut and beat you with it. Then you're going to need some ice and ibuprofen. Good job, Mr. Dana White. You gave Conor a fight he can actually win. I could whip Cowboy Cerrone's old ass. Dana, you got a lot of guts. You were talking trash to, quote, Oscar De La Cokehead. Oscar could knock you out with one punch. Dana, you look just like Andre Agassi, except you're really big and fat. Dana, I love the way you stand in between the fighters that weigh in, like you could do something. Those female strawweight fighters could kick your ass. Jim, before I take off, tell your little dwarf, Alvin, to do his job and give me a ticket. Everyone knows that the smack-off is better when Callan Vegas shows up. From the trailer parks in North Vegas to the south side of Hendertucky, you're welcome.
Good night now!